On the program today, inflation, of course, supply chain, of course, also beer, also, of course. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Wednesday, today, 13 October. Good as always to have you along, everybody. These two things can be, and today are, true at the same time. Thing number one, inflation, as we learned this morning, is high. Prices at the consumer level up 5.4% in September over a year ago. Thing number two, inflation, the rate of increase in inflation specifically, is slowing. That 5.4% is just a smidge higher than inflation was running in August. And those things are both great. But here's what really matters in this crazy mixed-up economy of ours, how consumers have changed their expectations of inflation yet to come. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman gets us going.
In the report, economists saw broad price spikes for pocketbook items that impact Americans every day. Ken Matheny is with IHS Market.
Food prices, rents, vehicle prices, gasoline prices rose in September.
The New York Fed reports consumers expect inflation this time next year will still be running above 5%, an all-time high for the survey. Duke economist Connell Fullenkamp says pandemic price shocks might be dislodging low inflation expectations that have lasted for decades.
People are much more short-term focused, and they reflect much more on their short-term experience, you know, when they go to the grocery store or the gas station.
And the disruptions of the pandemic might make matters worse.
We've experienced shortages. You have to pay more if you can get something. That may be enough experience to change people's outlook and to say, oh, gosh, I can pay a little bit more to get something sooner. To me, that's one of these things that could really be a game changer.
This can set off an inflationary spiral, says Ken Matheny.
If consumers expect higher inflation, businesses may perceive more pricing power, and actual price increases may accelerate and lead to higher actual inflation.
Then workers demand higher wages to keep up with the higher prices, which could lead the Fed to raise interest rates to slow inflation and the recovery. But there's something the Fed knows about us consumers, says Joseph Bruzuelas at consulting firm RSM.
Consumer inflation expectations run 1% to 1.5% above actual inflation.
But Bruzuelas says what matters most to the Fed is what financial professionals, investors, think inflation will be long term. And he says they're pegging inflation 5 to 10 years out, right around the Fed's target of 2%. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
You might have heard this morning the Social Security cost of living adjustment next year is going to be almost 6%, the biggest bump in 40 years. Thank you, inflation. But just as inflation giveth, so inflation taketh away, specifically for people on fixed incomes. Marketplace's Caroline Champlin has that one.
This month, Mary Johnson will start collecting Social Security payments, and she has a message for her fellow first-timers.
You got lucky. This was a big cola.
Johnson is grateful to still be working as a policy analyst for the Senior Citizens League. That income has helped her stay afloat in Virginia, where she lives.
I have to do repairs to my home. I've been waiting for the costs to come down a little bit before I started that. So there's some big expenses ahead.
She's worried about seniors who are having to pay high prices with their retirement savings.
I have sitting beside me over 300 emails that we have received in just the past 2 months from people who are desperate.
Food costs, medical bills, and rising rents are some of their usual concerns. Alston Green, a senior in New York City, had to cut back on some luxuries, like spending at restaurants.
They charge a surcharge. I mean, I'm not unrealistic. They've had a really hard time.
Even so, he's had to dip into his savings to pay for health insurance. And he isn't sure the increase to Social Security will go that far.
They keep screaming about it being such a big increase. It's not going to be that much of an increase.
The adjustments lift benefits along with inflation, but can't take them back down if prices drop. In that case, seniors may have more buying power, at least for a while. I'm Caroline Champlin for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, a little up, a little down, kind of bumpy, actually. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Ask not for whom the global computer chip shortage cometh, because it cometh for Apple. So reports Bloomberg. The phone company that used to be a computer company is likely to cut production of its iPhone 13, putting it in the same chip-scarce boat as the automotive and appliance industries, among a bunch of others, as you know. Thing is, Apple had managed to stay above the fray and ahead of the shortages just because it's so big. But not anymore, and it ain't just Apple. Marketplace's Andy Euler has the Semiconductor Shortage Situation Report for this Wednesday.
Apple could end up producing 10 million fewer of its brand new iPhone 13s this year than it had planned. That's according to Daniel Ives at Wedbush Securities. He says that's telling.
They up to now have really seen Teflon-like ability to navigate the chip shortage, but ultimately the midnight struck on the clock and we're seeing the result accordingly.
Now, it's not because demand for the new iPhones isn't there. Apple just can't get some of the parts to make them. And one is all it takes. Chris Casso at Raymond James, a marketplace underwriter, says in this case, it's a camera assembly made in Vietnam. And a hiccup like that can throw the whole supply chain off.
With very tight supply conditions everywhere, there's just no more slack in the system.
Casso says that's something consumers are starting to realize when they see the delivery time for the phone they just bought is something like 6 weeks. Scott Kessler of the consultancy Third Bridge says not only are supply chains fragile,
there really is very little control over a lot of the determining factors that are dictating, you know, major delays in lead times that, frankly, is having a substantial impact on a variety of companies.
He says Apple's probably going to weather this storm better than most, but he expects tight supply chains will be the reality well into 2022, and we could even still be talking about them in early 2023. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
In commodity news today, aluminum hit a 13-year high. Not so great considering it's used in pretty much everything, from the iPhones that Andy Euler was just telling us about to, oh, just for instance, beer cans. T.O. Hunter is the co-founder and COO of Crowns and Hops Brewing. We talked to him a year ago this past August when he and his business partner were looking for a place to build the first black-owned craft brewery in Inglewood, California, which is, as it happens, a predominantly black and Latino city. So, given supply chains and rising costs and all of that, we called him back. Hey, T.O., thanks for coming on.
Right on. Great to be back. How's it going?
It's going well, but enough about me. We had you on. We went out to Inglewood and did a little interview stand-up out on the street out there about last August or so, August of 2020. What has been on since as you're trying to get this company off the ground?
Oh, wow. So much has happened. I think then we were still in the process of identifying a place where we would actually call home. Mm-hmm. Since then, we've finally decided on a property.
Oh, good.
And we're happy to announce that Crowns Inglewood will start construction in about the next few weeks.
That's good. So how close is that to the new football stadium for the Rams and the Chargers?
Oh, it's walking distance. We're really excited to be what to many would be on the opposite side of where most of the development is happening. Our goal was always to give something beautiful, something that was indicative of black and brown excellence to the community. And that's what Crowns Inglewood will represent. So we're really excited about our location.
Talk to me about that thing you mentioned there almost in passing, but it's so core to what you and this company are trying to do. Bring attention to brown and black entrepreneurs and the businesses they build as service to the community. You're really intentional about that.
Absolutely. I mean, it's intentional even in every one of our beers.
Yeah.
You know, this month we re-release our 8 Trill Pills beer, which is a pilsner that we actually dedicate to accomplishing racial equity. You know, again, if you consider the disparities of black-owned businesses in craft beer, out of the 9,000 breweries that are in this country, less than 1% are black-owned. That means less than 60. And of those 60, less than half of those have their own facilities. So we're excited to be a case study to what it means to be accomplishing racial equity, as well as being a resource for the community, because ultimately that's what Crowns Inglewood will be, a community space, a public house.
In the truest sense of the word, right? Back to the word pub, right? In public.
There it is. You nailed it.
All of that said, though, you got to run a business, and aluminum prices are up. I mean, CO2 prices are up, for crying out loud, in this pandemic. That has to be having a hit to your bottom line.
It's hitting everybody. It's unfortunate that some of the suppliers have even pulled contracts from some of the smaller groups, and we're really forced to go through brokers to get the very supplies that we need. So it's a pretty painful experience. But I think our community is really showing up, regardless of the price maybe being a dollar higher, still going out there and supporting Crowns and Hops beer.
I don't want that to go by unnoticed. Small companies are getting squeezed by the big companies in times of supply shortages. That's what you're saying.
Absolutely. It's undeniable that the larger corporations who traditionally have larger purchase orders for aluminum are going to get the preference. Smaller organizations, people that contract like us, are unfortunately having to go through brokers in order to get the same supplies at a much higher rate. It's tough.
Yeah. So let me ask the downer of a question. Is there any doubt in your mind that you're going to make it? I mean, you've made it through this pandemic. You've got a lease signed and you're going to start construction, but are you safe, I guess, is the question.
I think, I don't know if any entrepreneurs subscribe to the concept of safe. But what I will say is one of the things we've been fortunate to do. We just launched an equity crowdfunding campaign, and the goal is to be able to have this space so that regardless of what those supplies are and what's available, that we can still pour a glass. Mm-hmm. And right now we're on track to do that.
T.O. Hunter, he's a co-founder, also currently the COO of a brewing company called Crowns and Hops, and soon the proprietor, I guess, of a public house in Inglewood, California, called Crowns and Hops Inglewood. T.O., thanks a lot. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
Coming up.
650 engines don't come along every day.
Well, no. No, they don't. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial is pretty much flat today, 34,377. The NASDAQ up 105, almost 0.75%, finished at 14,571. S&P 500 up 13.3%, 43.63. Big banks are starting third quarter earnings reports this week. JP Morgan beat expectations, but shares, because this is capitalism, down 2.6% today. We heard from Andy Euler about Apple. Apple down 0.4% today. Intel gained almost 0.2%. Bond prices, well, they rose. Thanks very much for asking. The yield on the 10-year T-note down to 1.54%. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Among the many economic lessons of the pandemic is the perhaps by now obvious one that the way we do childcare in this country just isn't working. Most caregivers and teachers don't make a living wage. 90% of all occupations pay more than early childhood education jobs do. They're on par with dog walkers and fast food workers. There was $39 billion to stabilize child care in the American Rescue Plan, and congressional Democrats do have bigger goals long term. But in the meanwhile, with the labor market the way it is and so many jobs open right now, as we've been telling you, child care centers are having a heck of a time attracting new teachers. Marketplace's Amanda Peacher has that one.
At an early childhood education and preschool center in Hemet, California, Lauren Thomas guides a 2-year-old with bedhead hair toward the classroom sink after nap time.
We need to wash hands and then you need to go potty.
Thomas was hired here at VIP Tots as a teacher in March.
Step up.
I love it. I love spending time with the toddlers. Love being around them. They just make me happy, like, every day.
Scrub. Can we count? One,
to...
Thomas is the kind of caregiver many parents want for their children. She recently got an associate's degree in early childhood education. She has two kids, and she really loves caring for young children.
Six, seven...
It's hard work, and Thomas says she knows there are better-paying jobs out there.
There is, but I rather would be here. I'm here to teach the children and be with them and educate them.
There are two teachers for seven toddlers in Thomas's classroom. Early childhood experts say small class sizes are necessary, and one reason daycare can cost more than $17,000 a year. Caitlin McLean is with the Center for the Study of Child Care Employment at the University of California, Berkeley, and says the cost makes sense.
We shouldn't be trying to make this a cheap service.
McLean says the 0 to 5 years are an important time for child development, and you want teachers who are trained and certified. And that's one reason, she says, it's hard to square the fact that early childhood care and education costs parents so much. But
it's actually one of the worst paid jobs that you can have in America.
Hourly wages in other sectors like hospitality and retail are going up.
And that's just really hard to compete with.
Jared Dobbins is the executive director of VIP Tots. He says teachers like Lauren Thomas earn between $15 and $20 an hour. He's had some applicants, but not enough, and some don't take his offers. Most of VIP Tots' funding comes from fixed government subsidies, so there's no wiggle room in his budget to increase wages.
You are kind of hamstrung, and just in terms of the ability to do significant increases to pay.
Staffing and compensation have long been a challenge for child care centers. A recent national survey showed 80% of them are short-staffed. But if the child care system was barely holding together before, it completely fell apart during the pandemic, says Avery Pakulis with the advocacy group First Focus on Children.
It finally showed that our child care system is unworkable as it currently exists and as it's currently funded.
And how crucial child care is to economic recovery.
Parents literally cannot work unless they have safe, healthy, high-quality places to bring their children.
But not all parents have perfect or affordable options, and they still have to work. Federal grants from the American Rescue Plan are designed to help parents and child care centers to raise teacher pay by cleaning supplies or attract new staff.
The purpose of that money is really to stop the bleeding of the last year and a half.
But the grants have been slow to reach some daycare centers. Meanwhile, Jared Dobbins says he's short 13 teachers at VIP Tots right now. He knows that means more work and pressure on the teachers he does have, and that weighs on him.
You know, you see the tiredness that some of your teachers go home with every day.
So if or when his child care center gets a federal grant, he says he'll use it for bonuses to thank the teachers who have stuck with him. I'm Amanda Peacher for Marketplace.
Well, let's see. Southwest Airlines seems to have its problems of the past couple of days. Flight cancellations by the thousands, mostly behind it. TSA says its throughput numbers are steady, lower than their recent peak, but steady. And Delta's CEO Ed Bastian said today he is looking at a pretty profitable 2022 after a way down couple of years. Told you that as a way to talk about Rolls-Royce Holdings, not the high-end car company, but the British aviation and marine engine maker separated from the automaker back in the 1970s, by the way. Last year, Rolls-Royce Holdings tumbled to a nearly $5.5 billion loss and laid off nearly 9,000 people. But as Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports now from London, everybody loves a good turnaround story.
Rolls-Royce is one of the world's leading engineering companies.
The corporate video does not exaggerate. The company is one of the top three aero engine makers, but that global prominence exposed it to the ravages of COVID-19. CEO Warren East speaking from the depths of last year's major downturn in aviation.
We've never seen the commercial aerospace market drop as much as it's dropped. I mean, we've never seen an immediate drop like this, anything like it.
The company's revenues collapsed. At one point, the share price had fallen almost 90% from its peak. But in recent weeks, things have been picking up. The share price has rebounded, boosted by the planned resumption of transatlantic air travel and by a series of unexpected positives for Rolls-Royce. An American B-52 bomber taking off from a British airfield. That sound, says Richard Abulafia of the Teal Group consulting firm, is now music to the ears of Rolls-Royce.
There was a big U.S. Department of Defense contract to re-engine the B-52, and that's had a nice galvanizing effect upon the company's outlook.
It certainly has. Against stiff U.S. competition, Rolls won the deal to supply an amazing 650 B-52 engines.
These days, if you win an engine deal, it's usually two engines per airplane.
Guy Norris of Aviation Week.
But here you are all of a sudden with an eight-engined airplane. So numbers like 650 engines don't come along every day.
And there's the prospect of another big defence deal that has surfaced unexpectedly involving underwater warfare.
The weapons officer has my permission to fire.
You have permission to fire.
Captain's permission to fire. Roger.
Permission to fire.
Initiate fire. 10, channel 1.
Rolls supplies the engines for the British Navy's nuclear-powered submarines. Some investors believe it could now pick up a lot more business under the new Australia-UK-US submarine pact unveiled last month. And the company's nuclear expertise has opened up an even more enticing vista. A safety indicator at work in a nuclear power station. Renewed interest has been growing in this low-carbon, constant source of energy. Tim Yeo runs a pro-nuclear think tank. He applauds the work Rolls has been doing on a new breed of small, modular reactors.
They are modular in design, and therefore the components can all be built in factories. And we expect that that will both speed up the process, and it is very likely, they're not yet obviously proved, very likely that it'll prove cheaper.
Under $3 billion a pop, according to one estimate, a fraction of the cost of a large custom-made reactor.
I think the future may well be small modular reactors, and that's particularly interesting to the UK because Rolls-Royce is one of the global leaders in developing this technology.
Rolls's CEO has been quoted saying that this business could one day dwarf the whole of the existing company. Export markets could be huge, but not everyone buys this rosy scenario.
Well, the problem is it requires a massive leap of faith.
Steve Thomas, Professor of Energy Policy at Greenwich University. He says this is still untested technology and would require some $40 billion of taxpayers' cash to get off the ground.
It's a very big bet of public money on something that might or might not prove to be an economic winner.
Nevertheless, travelling hopefully is often better than arriving, and with aviation picking up and defence spending set to jump, Rolls-Royce is certainly travelling more hopefully today than it was a year ago. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, you have heard, of course, the news from the White House that the Port of Los Angeles, whence we brought you a port backlog story the other day, is going to go 24/7 in an effort to clear that backlog. Two things about that. Number one, the 30-day rolling average for delays at the port, that is how long ships have to wait out at the anchorage to pull in and unload, 11 and a half days as of right now. And the before times, 0 days. Number two, and in other news, the Port of L.A. and all the unloading and trucking wasn't already 24/7? It's not like this backlog thing is new, right? All right, we got to go. Here, though, is your moment of economic context. A look ahead to, well, I'm just going to guess February or so, the next time the debt limit is going to squeeze us. You've heard, perhaps, about the trillion-dollar coin. If not, never fear. We're going to do the story soon-ish. But Harris did a poll and asked people who had heard of the mint the coin movement, which is basically, if Congress doesn't raise the debt limit, the Treasury Secretary, in accordance with the law, mints a platinum coin denominated at $1 trillion and uses the proceeds to pay the government's bills. Anyway, of those who had heard of the mint the coin idea, 50% were in favor of it, but 50% said, nah, the government should default. And I'm going to say that's the wrong answer. Our media production team is Brian Allison, Drew Jostad, Gary O'Keefe, Jeff Peters, Liana Squillace, Charlton Thorpe, One Colors Dorado, and Becca Weinman. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.